Good morning, councillors. Good morning, staff, and good morning to our community in attendance. It's lovely to see you. Thank you for coming along this morning. I would like to declare the annual general meeting to be being held today on the Sunday. And we'll get it right here in a moment. Saturday, the 3rd of December 2016, open. I would like to remind those in attendance that it is council policy to record council meetings. The audio recording of this meeting will be made available to the public on council's website for a period of 12 months. In accordance with council policy, I will ask the general manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed.
And the general manager has confirmed same. At this point, I would like to acknowledge and pay respect to the elders that are here today. I acknowledge those who have passed before us and acknowledge members of the Tasmanian Aboriginal community who are also attending this event. Attendees, today we have myself, Councillor Wass, Deputy Mayor Reid, Councillor Atkinson, Councillor Berry, Councillor Percy, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Grace and Councillor Winter. Staff in attendance, we have our General Manager, Mr. Gary Arnold, our Deputy General Manager, Mr. Tony Ferrier, our Executive Manager, Organisational Development, Ms. Penny Hughes, our Executive Manager, Information Services, Mr. Fred Malt, our Media and Communications Officer, Ms. Sarah Wilcox, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Amanda Morton. Also in attendance, we have Mr. Rodney Eggleston and Garth Anker from March Studios that you will hear from in due course. Apologies. This morning we have two apologies, that being for Councillor Chatterton and Councillor Fox. I will move to now page 2 of the agenda, and I will ask councillors to advise if they have any declarations of interest that they wish to advise. Councillors, are there any declarations of interest? There are none. Thank you. The next item is confirmation of minutes of the annual general meeting, which was held on the 23rd of November 2015, and a recommendation I'm looking for that the minutes be, and I had Councillor Berry and Councillor Reid. The motion before us, moved by Councillor Berry, seconded by Councillor Reid, is that the minutes of the annual general meeting held on the 23rd of November 2015 be confirmed as a true record. I'll ask councillors to vote. Those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And anyone opposing? That is carried unanimously. The 2015-16 annual report has been circulated, and there is that one on a bench behind you. And what I would like to do now is to present a summary of the year in review for you. And I would like to again say good morning and welcome to Kingborough Council's annual general meeting for 2015-16. We are proud to report that Kingborough continues to perform to high standards when it comes to community service delivery and strengthening business partnerships, and I'm pleased to present this annual report, including a summary of key achievements across our organisation. At the conclusion of the financial year, Council had reported a surplus of $7.2 million. This is substantially impacted by unusual non-operating items of the initial recognition of road retaining walls, which was $6.3 million, and the contribution of infrastructure assets by developers as part of new subdivisions equaling $4.1 million. A truer indication of Council's financial performance for the year is the underlying result, which is shown at note 16 on page 53 of the annual report. This shows our underlying deficit for the year was $2.2 million, which is an increase of $950,000 from 2014-15. The primary cause of this increase is reduced grant funding, increased depreciation caused by the revaluation of assets, and the componentisation of road assets. This means our road assets have been separated into their component values, such as footpaths, curb and channel, road services, etc. Council's long-term financial plan contains the roadmap for us to return to an underlying surplus by the year 2020. We continue to provide strong management of major projects and maintenance of our assets. There were 157 projects commenced over the financial year, with the majority completed on time and to budget. Several projects were carried forward into the next financial year to make sure that they were delivered more effectively and efficiently. The Kingston Beach foreshore redevelopment work has progressed at a pace, with new facilities being installed at the northern end of the beach and the Osborne Esplanade Beach Road Junction has been upgraded. Residents and visitors who use Kingston Beach were invited to have their say on the facilities and landscaping being developed as part of the master plan. And I'm happy to say that almost 450 responses were submitted. The draft design has been presented to the community and work will progress over the next year. Council has invested $3.4 million on new road infrastructure over the year. The maintenance of the existing network of roads and bridges, and also includes activities such as potholing and grading, cost $4 million. These figures exclude depreciation. The focus has been to renew and maintain the network to make sure a suitable level of service is provided. Upgrades and new works were completed to supplement the existing network, including the resheeting of gravel roads, resealing and major patching for sealed roads, and a number of footpath renewals. Kingborough's rapid growth means that council stormwater infrastructure is no longer able to cope with the demand, and council has seen an increase in spending over the last financial year from $800,000 to $1.8 million. A stormwater rate has been introduced that will be used to fund essential upgrades to the existing stormwater system over future years. I believe all councillors have received a lot of queries about this rate, and the reason we have introduced the rate is that the stormwater management is an issue for the whole community and goes beyond the connection that removes stormwater from properties connected to a pipe system. Ineffective stormwater system can contribute to flood damage and degradation of our natural waterways. As such, the improvements to our stormwater network will have public and community-wide benefits. The Beretta Rehabilitation Levy, which ended at the close of the financial year, enabled a range of works to be completed at the site and to make it a safer environment, as well as improved access for increasing traffic and larger vehicles. Council continues to monitor the site and to control landfill gas, leachate and stormwater from the area and to make improvements as and when required. A weekly garbage and a fortnightly recycling collection to approximately 13,000 properties in Kingborough continues to be provided by council, and two free green waste weekends were offered at the Beretta Waste Transfer Station. Looking forward, council is developing a 10-year waste management strategy and has invited community members to complete a survey to assist in this process. Further comment will be invited once the draft has been completed. Council's commitment to being a leader in climate change adaptation has led to the publication of the Kingston Beach Integrated Natural Hazard and Climate Change Project and the investigation into the proposed establishment of a climate change innovative lab in Kingborough. And as a result of that work's done, Kingborough was invited to represent Local Government Australia at a special meeting in Melbourne in June. The Deputy General Manager, Mr. Tony Ferrier, will be giving a presentation on this work shortly. The Natural Resource Management Team has delivered a number of projects to restore degraded areas of bushland, growing over 8,000 native plants and working with the community to plant them across 20 sites. A highlight of the revegetation program was the establishment of a habitat planting for the critically endangered swift parrot at a council reserve in Tramway Hill, Margate. A revised weed management strategy and action plan was developed, and tremendous progress on tackling weed issues on council's managed land has been made in the last year. We are also taking significant steps in cat management and are also working with the community to phase in bylaws for responsible cat ownership on Bruny Island. Council continues to deliver a variety of frequent learning and activity programs for all ages, as well as much needed services that include the successful volunteer program, Manor Gardens Respite Club, and Family Daycare. Our Love Living Locally event with the Lions Club of Kingborough grows every year, and our youth services activities are increasingly popular, including the barista and responsible serving of alcohol training. We have presented $60,000 to community groups across Kingborough through our community grants program this year. This program supports local community groups that they are able to provide a range of quality activities within Kingborough. It is designed to assist not-for-profit organisations that benefit and improve the quality of life and opportunities to all residents. The development project on the former Kingston High School site has progressed, starting with the renaming of the site to Kingston Park. That renaming was responsible from our community. The winner of the architectural competition for the new community hub was announced in June, and designs are well underway by March Studio, and those gentlemen that I indicated to you before will be doing a presentation shortly. Their design will provide a striking community centre that will provide an effective reuse of the old gym building and will be a facility that is flexible for future changing demands in the heart of Kingston. Construction will begin next year along with main roads and the Kingborough Health Centre. While this project will provide significant benefits to the municipality in the long term, it will have an impact on financial performance of council over the project period. And this is due to the need to borrow funds to allow for capital expenditure on the site. At different stages of the project, land will be released for sale to allow for a reduction in borrowings to minimise cost impact. Unless grant funds are received, there is an expectation that a project will leave council with some borrowings that will need to be paid off over future years. And for the last 3 years under the Stronger Regions Fund, we have made applications without success, and the next round of borrowing applications, I believe, opens on the 29th of January next, and there will be a further application of some $5 million to start that project. The new Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 was publicly exhibited and was part of a coordinated regional project that ensured that the 12 Southern Tasmanian planning schemes were prepared in a consistent and comprehensive manner. The Tasmanian planning scheme draft provisions were released by the state government in March, and council submitted a report to the Tasmanian Commission in response. Finally, I would like to mention council amalgamations and resource sharing, as they continue to be fairly hot topics. Council is working together with other councils to investigate all of our options in order to identify the best possible outcomes for our ratepayers. We must consider taking steps to improve efficiency and effectiveness of local government, making sure the best interests of our community are at the centre of any potential changes. Council signed a Memorandum of Understanding in November 2015 for studies to examine options for voluntary amalgamations and strategic shared services for Greater Hobart Councils, which included Hobart, Glenorchy and Clarence City Councils. My fellow councillors and I will continue to aim for high-performing council over the coming year to achieve our vision of being a thriving, a vibrant and connected community which delivers best quality service to you, our ratepayers. Councillors, I draw you to page 2, the 2015-16 annual report, which I know all councillors have a copy, and there is a recommendation on page 2 that I'm seeking. I have a mover in Councillor Percy and a seconder in Councillor Reid that the annual report of the Kingborough Council for the year ended the 30th of June 2016 be received and adopted. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? We'll have a division or a show of hands, please. Councillors in favour of the motion are Councillors Winter, Bastone, Percy, Berry, Atkinson, Reet and Wass, and opposing the motion, Councillor Grace. Motion is carried. We'll move on to page 3, and I would ask our Deputy General Manager, Mr. Tony Ferrier, to make a presentation on climate change and Kingborough's coast. Mr. Ferrier.
Mr. Mayor, just before we go, we don't get an opportunity to debate the annual plan, the annual report. It's a recommendation, but normally we have, if we want to discuss anything on it. But because it's the AGM, we're not allowed to discuss any issues that my concern and why I voted against the annual report.
That's right. Yeah, thank you, Councillor Grace. The matter's been voted on and that's it. You chose to vote against it, so that's fine. That has been noted. Mr. Ferrier.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can I just record the apology from John Doole? John Doole was going to make this presentation, so I'm just making it on his behalf. The presentation is one on coastal management and... I'll speak a bit louder. The presentation is one on coastal management and in particular climate change. Climate change poses a significant risk to Kingborough and its coastal communities. In the last few years, Council has been trying to obtain a better understanding of the nature and scale of these risks. It is apparent that any damage to Kingborough's coastline and the potential flooding and damage to homes and other assets is a problem and will only get worse in the future. We have taken a case study approach at key locations such as Conyngham and Kingston Beach to better understand how bad things may get and what, if anything, can be done in response. As you can see by the sketch map on the screen, Kingborough does have a lot of coastline, so it is important to get the best idea of where the greatest risks and pressures are on our coasts and what future changes to weather patterns and sea levels may mean to the coastal communities. This diagram comes from an earlier study and is evidence that Council has been playing in this space for quite a long time. For example, Entrecasteaux channel and catchment study was coordinated by Council in 1999 to 2000, and since then a detailed state of the estuary report was completed in 2012 as part of the ongoing D'Entrecasteaux collaboration involving others interested in our marine and coastal environment. A few years ago, Chris Sharples from UTAS produced a detailed evaluation of the vulnerability of Kingborough's coastline to coastal erosion and flooding, both currently and into the future. Chris highlighted the locations and key facilities that were most at risk, as shown by the hotspots on the diagram on the screen. With this information, Council can better focus its future investigations and works priorities. With this kind of study, it is usual to consider the current situation, that is, what are our current risks, and then consider what the situation is likely to be in say, 2050 and 2100. These dates are important to Council, as we know that any major works or buildings or development approvals are likely to still be in place by about 2100. Council has conducted a fairly extensive evaluation of aerial photographic information in order to get a benchmark for monitoring any coastal damage that may be occurring. On the left, we can see that at Gordon, historic coastal location comparison between the coastline in 1940, which is the red line, and in 2015, which is the green line, indicates that over 25 metres of coast has been lost in some places. This means that the Crown Foreshore Reservation no longer exists and private property boundaries are now under pressure. On the right, we can see that this leads to property owners undertaking coastal protection works that may or may not be legal and or safe. Council is usually expected to regulate such activity, which is usually made more difficult if Crown land is involved and their subsequent hands-off approach has been adopted by the state government. From the coastal vulnerability report that Chris Sharples prepared, we've been able to get a better understanding of the coastal erosion processes at critical sites. For example, at the Neck on Bruny Island, the ocean beach is able to rebuild after storms and may actually be growing. The channel site, however, is eroding significantly and cannot rebuild as readily. This has put the main road at risk, and the issue does appear to now require fairly urgent attention. This kind of information is an important consideration in the design of the Neck Road upgrade. Conyngham is an example of our case study approach and how it is being used to assess local coastal risks, pressures and future planning needs. Severe erosion is occurring along the length of this iconic beach, with this putting pressure on the car park and road, the trees along the foreshore, which also provide swift parrot habitat, the stormwater drains and public access to the beach. Not only are severe weather events and storm surges causing erosion, but also activities such as parking dinghies along the shoreline. Council has been monitoring and mapping the extent and the rate of the erosion. We've found that to truly understand the erosion risks at Conyngham, we need to also understand the geomorphology of the beach, including how far under the thin sand layer the bedrock is and how steep it is. This map gives us a much better picture of where the erosion is likely to occur and what assets may need protecting. From this, we are able to obtain advice on what might be the short, medium and longer term responses and maybe the implications of not responding at all. The scale, timing, cost and potential community acceptability of options varies hugely. Good information, however, can form the basis of an informed conversation about potential responses now and into the future. A reasonably quick assessment does establish that the estimated costs of options such as seawalls, beach nourishment and artificial reefs are potentially huge. So, can they be done? And if so, by who, when and how would they be funded? Many people at Conyngham are very aware of these coastal issues. In the past, local community-based sandbagging working bees in response to predicted king tide and storm events have been fairly successful. Council has recently completed a more significant sandbagging project that is hoped will offer some protection for the next few years. This was very cost-effective, with the heavy works involving community corrections personnel. This will buy us some time for greater planning and community consultation to occur. I seem to have missed a slide. No, sorry, I've missed a slide. I'll just talk briefly about Kingston Beach. Another detailed case study is being undertaken at Kingston Beach. In-house experience has been acquired to allow detailed modelling and mapping of the potential for inundation at Kingston Beach due to river flooding, future sea level rise and in particular a combination of both. There's a map, we've got a series of maps which indicate the extent of inundation potential in the year 2100. A former engineer of council, Graham Howard, designed and supervised the building of the current seawall in 1960 after a huge storm event. In the future, it seems apparent that the wall will not be high enough. With this modelling, council can now further develop ideas to reduce the risk of inundation at Kingston Beach, and these can in the future be tested for potential effectiveness. As at Conyngham, this can then form the basis of community and key stakeholder discussions and planning to get an idea of the acceptability and feasibility of different adaptation options. In order to further involve the Kingston Beach community, as well as achieving much broader partnerships, Council is considering the establishment of a Kingborough Climate Change Innovation Lab, and this would be located in part of the Kingston Beach Community Hall. The lab would be a hub where experts and the community would interact and work together to explore the real-world challenges and opportunities that climate change creates. The lab has received good external support and could feasibly be operational by mid-2017. In order to respond to such coastal challenges, Council does need to develop strong partnerships across all levels of government, as well as with research establishments, community and business. One such partnership that we do have is with the National Climate Change Adaptation Research Facility, including the development of an interactive coastal management tool called CoastAdapt. Many other coastal councils from all over Australia are actively involved. The new Coast Adapt website contains a wealth of information, including technical information and guidance to support decision makers to manage the risks associated with climate change on the coast. It also includes the Kingston Beach case study. What I presented is a very brief summary of the current situation, and we would welcome the opportunity to respond to any future inquiries from local communities about their particular concerns in future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ferrier. We'll now have a presentation from Garth Anker and Rodney Eccleston, and Garth and Rodney will be giving us an update, if you like, on work in relation to the community hub, or as we probably refer to it or have referred to it in the past, the former gymnasium building at the former Kingston High School site, now referred to as Kingston Park.
Okay. Firstly, thank you very much for the invitation to come and present this today. This is very much a very exciting project for our office, and we're looking forward to the new year and seeing it built. We came about this commission via a competition. And I guess our starting point for that competition was to think of how we perceive Kingborough. And this image that we're showing here is a beautiful image of down on Kettering, with actually Rodney's father's boat out in the middle of it there, that they love to come down and spend a lot of time here.
It's a good way of avoiding paying rates.
It's a cheap holiday. I grew up here. Rodney spends a lot of time here holidaying, and we're very familiar with the area and love it a lot. So our starting point then with the competition was to look at the master plan that had been done on the former Kingston High School site, and we noticed that straight away the proposed area for the new town square, which was here, was coming off the existing gym building of the former Kingston High School, and that was quite exposed to the southwesterlies coming up the channel, basically orientated the town square back to the back of the new medical building and the future residences here, but also blocked the view across to Bonnet Hill and up to Mount Wellington. So we started to have a think about whether keeping the gym was the best idea, and how we could actually keep some of that structure there to not lose the sense of history that's there for people that have been to school at Kingston High. So we decided that instead of putting the square on the outside, we would actually incorporate the square into the gym building. So we basically inverted the proposed situation, and we thought then we could look at, on that current quadrangle area or former quadrangle area, we could look at how we could then house the program for the community hub. And then we started to look at the history of the area, looking at the very celebrated fishing, the former timber industries, this sort of industrial type of industry that's been in Kingborough for a long time. We thought our design should really pick up on that and celebrate that. So we thought about materiality and thought about ways to best kind of showcase that. So we've looked at a design that uses that picks up on some of the fishing infrastructure of the cages and things, some of the timber from the, even going back from the apple crates to some of the timber mills that are around. So trying to express that natural material. And we thought the design should really be something that's quite honest. It's probably not appropriate to have a very slick building that sort of is too modern. We thought it would be something that should be a nice, honest building that people could really identify with and make their own. So part of that, part of the stage was this survey. I'm not sure if anyone filled out the survey here, but we had 123 responses. And most of those responses were very positive. A lot of the comments that came through and a lot of the areas of the design that people were really keen to see develop were to do with the future playground and the outdoor areas and the idea that this could be a space, a real event space for outdoor cinema or music events or market events. So I think we're on the right track. On the left there, the first list you see there are the top three responses, and that was public amenities, children's playground and public barbecue and picnic area. So they were the big things. But I think we've got a pretty good mix in terms of showing a design that has a cafe, which is going to be run, a community-run cafe, a multi-purpose space for exhibitions, for markets, as I said, and then a potential space there for people to use as an office or as a meeting point to conduct some business as well. And then looking at how best to put together what I was just talking about with all this program and keeping the town square under the gym building. So these were just some early diagrams that we did, trying to capture the view back to Mount Wellington, back to Bonnet Hill, grab that northern exposure from the sun and block out this prevailing southwesterly wind that comes through so we could have a semi-sheltered town square space. And then, I don't know, Rodney, if you want to...
Yeah, sure. So this is the existing Kingston High Gym as we're presented with it. So what we're trying to do is retain as much of that as possible. We like the idea of retaining the history of that shell as well. And it also means that we can use parts of it for the new building. We then build around that structure. So we're creating a new kind of spine over to the left there. And by placing that away from the gym, next slide, thanks Garth, getting a kind of internal street or a natural division between what will be the new town square and the new multi-purpose space, but then also a bit of a modular building situation where we can house all sorts of different programs, be them we just saw the climate change community centre or the
think tank.
Or a think tank or bathrooms or offices, etc. So there's an attempt as well through keeping the old structure of the gym to have a kind of a flexible wall so that you can open up the whole space or close down the space as well. This is just a view from the entrance, so picking up this idea of one roof that sits over the top of all the program, and that gives you a sense of that street that will be formed. So to the right will be the multi-purpose space and to the left all sorts of various programs I'll just about go through. So the community hall, it's partially secure, it's mostly undercover, and then it's at points it's outside as well. And we like the idea that this whole space can be used as one, or it can be segregated down into smaller pieces so that you guys can use it however you want. So this gives you a sense of the secure space, which could be used for galleries or performances or presentations like this. There's an idea of a modular system for a gallery wall that can be wheeled out and then stored away efficiently. There's also an idea of a modular stage that can be wheeled around and configured to be bigger or smaller depending on what you need. And these are just some diagrams that map that area and show you some abilities to reconfigure that space. The colour on the ground is picking up on the old language from the gym, so when you have those markings on the ground to see the basketball and the netball. So we like the idea of bringing colour into the project, and paint is a cost-effective way of doing that, and also recording some of the tracings of what you might use the space for. That gives you a sense of inside that space. Outside that area, there's a covered outdoor area which is partially open as well. And that can really mean that by dividing the two spaces with a retractable wall, they can be opened up and made into one. And then the new town square, which opens up and out. So there's an idea that you can use that entire space for one event. This is showing a cinema screen or a basketball game as well.
So one of the ideas that we've had and received some positive feedback on was to have an outdoor cinema in the space. So we've positioned the screen, a drop-down screen, notionally in the area that Rodney was just describing, that undercover part of the town square, so it's all weather-protected. This is looking back towards the operable wall that shows you the extent of the space. It ends up being quite a large space. Obviously, flexibility is the key in the design. So if there's an event that comes up that doesn't require that much space, you just shut it off and section off the space and use the room as accordingly. This is a view back to the town square. So pretty much where this shot's taken from, you would be entering into the new proposed playground area, and that looks like a pretty exciting development as well, with a really state-of-the-art playground, destination playground, you might say. So then that can tie back into this area and you can get some activation into this space through the cafe, through the co-working space there on the left here as well. On the right here as well. This is just a diagram showing the more boring part of the design, which would be the toilets and the storage spaces and the garden storage spaces, but definitely necessary. And that's the co-working space there in the purple. As Rodney mentioned, the design of this building too is that it can then be extended. It's designed in a modular way that means we can just add on to it without it looking like a new addition, and it can just... as demand grows for this facility, we can add more rooms on. That's a view of the co-working space there, with this idea of flexible power and data adapters there, so you can basically use that space for one large meeting room or a series of small workstations. Just a diagram showing how that would work. And then we have at the front this administration area, which at the moment we're showing it as two meeting rooms, an administration or entry reception area, and then a tourism kiosk, so people who are visiting the area can come down and get some information on Bruny Island or some of the trails down the channel. That's just a view of how that's conceptualised at the moment. This is the cafe space facing the east, so you'll pick up all the morning sun there through these large windows. Back here will be Bonnet Hill, view back to Bonnet Hill and up to the Mount Wellington, and that's really activating the edge of that town square. And all of these walls, as Rodney mentioned as well, are openable. So we can. This would obviously be a summer day, and then you can shut them down through the colder months. And we've also incorporated a kitchen garden for the cafe as well. So we're trying to produce some things that can be used in the cafe. There's also a community garden zone as part of this as well, so eventually I think the plan for the area is to have some residences around here in that whole development site, which will increase the amount of passive surveillance for this area and really help it to come alive, and this is one area that we think this could also benefit from activity. So there'll be a series of plots up here that people can use to grow vegetables, or even the school could come along and use this as an area to learn about horticulture. Then we apply the roof to this diagram, which is a series of plywood box beam structures, and then a large Aramax roof with solar panels shown there on the northern edge. That's a view of the cinema at night, and then at a much more popular screening there than the last one, and just confirming what we're talking about, really just a diagram of how the plan's shaping up. So the gym's here, and this is all the new additions around the sides. And that's it in its entirety. So thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Garth. Thank you, Garth, and thank you, Rodney. A very interesting project, and one that we're all waiting to see more information on. On page 3, councillors, and to our community members, the next item is general questions, submissions and motions from the floor. I will now invite the community, if there are, we will have Ms Hughes here to bring a microphone to you. I would ask that you would stand, that you would provide your name and address, and then if whatever you would like to say, that would be fine.
Hello, so it's a group of us. So my name is Chloe Bibari and my address is Unit 1, Number 9, Myona Road in Blackmans Bay.
And my name is Carolyn Walden and my address is 11 Sandra Drive, Blackmans Bay.
Hello, my name's Jen Featherston and my address is 5 Sandra Drive, Blackmans Bay.
And Samantha Diochanan, 9 Amberley Court, Blackmans Bay.
We are representing a large proportion of the Blackmans Bay community that is opposing the proposed Optus Mobile phone base station on Sherbet Oval, Blackmans Bay. In the small period of time that we have known about this proposal, we were able to gather information from the community regarding their response to this proposal. We focused on the 300 metre radius that was letterboxed by Optus. We spoke to 389 adults, and 351 of these adults were opposed to the proposal. This equates to 90% of those in the surveyed area being opposed to Optus's proposal. We have prepared a report summarising our findings, and we have sent a copy of this report to Optus as part of their consultation process. And we would like this report to be tabled by the Kingborough Council and considered by Council in regards to making any decision regarding leasing the land at Sherbet Oval to Optus or any other carrier. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies. We'll certainly take that on board, and if you give that to Ms Hughes there, that would be fine. It is a very topical happening, and what I'd like to do to give you some background, that's everyone in here today, that at its meeting on the 30th of March 2016, Council resolved in principle to support the installation of a tower at Sherbet Oval upon which to locate telecommunications equipment for Optus. The proposal is to replace one of the existing 25 metre light poles with a like-for-like tower that will incorporate both existing sports ground lights and the Optus equipment. Under the National Telecommunications legislation, the mobile phone equipment is deemed to be low impact facility and does not require a planning permit from Council. Council's decision was subject to Optus completing a community consultation process as prescribed by the Telecommunications Act 1997. Optus is currently undertaking this process, which has included two public information sessions held at the Blackmans Bay Hall on the 17th of November of this year. Public submissions to the proposal are being received by Optus up until the 8th of December. So we have another 5 days. Pardon?
Sorry, can I just correct this? We had to hand a letter if we were opposed until the 30th of November. That was the final date for us.
Right. I certainly, from my information I have from Optus, it did say the 8th, but yeah, certainly you've got that in, so that's fine. Thank you for that. Following which, Optus will prepare a report on the outcomes and advise Council as to whether they wish to proceed or not to proceed. In the event that Optus decides that he wants to proceed, council will then advertise its intention to lease the site in accordance with the provisions of the Local Government Act 1993, based on that information that I told you at the beginning. Public submissions will then be invited as part of this process, following which a report will be provided to council to make a final determination in relation to the granting or not granting of the lease. Any health concerns from mobile phone towers are not addressed by council. There is a national regulator in regard to such matters, and Optus is required to comply with national standards. And further information on that can be obtained from the Australian Communications and Media Authority website. There are many mobile phone base stations within residential and built-up areas, including the Kingborough Sports Centre alongside the Kingston High School. So at this point, ladies and gentlemen, council has not made any decisions, and I hope that has outlined the proceedings that will occur. Are there any further items that anyone would wish to bring forward? Yes, thank you.
My name is Jill Hickey. I'm the president of the Taroona Community Association. My address is 4 Devon Walk, Taroona. I represent both the Taroona Community Association and the Taroona Environment Network, and I'm attending the annual general meeting as our community is concerned about the state government's proposed subdivision of the Taroona Schools Crown Land at 90 to 96 Channel Highway. The Taroona Community Association is concerned about the lack of community engagement in this proposal to develop and subdivide land which is very much loved by the community to make money. The community has used this area as a public reserve for many decades since the school's development. The area provides important habitat for native flora, birds and animals. It is a recreational and open space connection that links the highway to the Derwent River foreshore, and it is an outdoor classroom and educational resource for the students of Taroona Primary and High Schools. We'd like to make a motion today at this meeting. I've got it written down somewhere. That the Kingborough Council write to the State Ministers for Crown Land and the Minister for Education requesting that the planning application for the subdivision of 90 to 96 Channel Highway Taroona, the Department of Education land, be withdrawn until the government engages appropriately with the Taroona community.
Thank you, Jill. Do I have a seconder, ladies and gentlemen? Robert Crossway.
Robert's fine.
Yeah, no one knows you.
I know. Sad, isn't it? Rob Crossway, Channel Highway, Lower Snug.
Thank you, Robert. We're just trying to get it on board here. Jill gave a number of or background of that information. Anything anyone else would like to add? Roger, do you want to say anything, or are you happy with what Jill said? Is there anyone that wished to speak to the item? Jill?
Can I add that the Taroona community is organising a community information walk tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock on site, so that members of the community and councillors can be familiar with the issues at hand. There has been no consultation with the Taroona community. The Education Department obviously has gone through the Taroona High School Association, actually, early last year, and at a meeting did gain their support. But this group does not represent the broader Taroona community. They represent the school community, which is much larger than Taroona. And so very few people in the community, no community members are aware of this other than the High School Association. So it's considered to be highly inappropriate process We understand that the council is hamstrung by this process because it's a planning application. The application was lodged under the previous planning scheme. So it is being assessed as under the previous planning scheme, being zoned residential at that time and a lower portion environmental management. Under the new interim planning scheme, it is zoned community purpose and it can't be subdivided in such a way. So this is highly inappropriate. Additionally, we'd like to actually... We're very unhappy about how the council advertises its planning applications, because currently your IT system does not allow you to upload very large documents. So consequently, all the community has to hand is the plans itself. The associated documents of, you know, approximately a couple of hundred pages at least, we have to come into the council to view paper reports that we are not allowed to copy. And it's just, in this day and age, for people who work and have families and other commitments, we cannot adequately review the documentation. So it's simply unfair. We asked the Education Department for copies of these documents. They rejected our application. So again, it's not a transparent and accountable process. Thank you.
Thank you, Jill. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to ask you to vote on it, but I will remind you that only electors within the municipal area of Kingborough are able to vote. So the recommendation is there that the council write to the State Minister for Crown Land and the Minister for Education requesting planning application for subdivision, that's of the Education Department land, be withdrawn until the government engage appropriately with the Taruna community. I would ask you to signify by raising your hand if you agree with that motion. So those in the yes, please do so. And those opposing, that is carried unanimously. And that item will be reported to council at its next meeting on the 12th of December.
I must say that the planning application representations close on the 9th of December. So the council's meeting follows that. The time frame does not work. So I'm not sure how you can deal with that administratively.
We will still deal with it, Jill. It's just that it will be reported to council after that close-off time. Any further items, ladies and gentlemen?
Hello, my name's Chris Ireland at 4 Oyster Court, Kettering. I'd like to move a motion from the floor in relation to the current state government review of the Bruny Island ferry operations. I move that the Kingborough Council will strongly urge the state government to consider traffic management and safety issues in Kettering when allocating the contract. I move this motion for two main reasons.
Chris, can I just stop you there? I just need to, if I can have a seconder, and then I'll ask you to speak to it.
Okay.
Yes, I have a seconder. If you could just...
Sorry, Peter Lord. Watson Drive, Kettering.
Thank you, Peter. Continue, Chris.
It'll be short. I'm moving this motion because, firstly, the state government need to impose different requirements on the operator to relieve traffic congestion and improve safety. Secondly, after a recent death of an overseas tourist in a traffic accident in Bruny Island, the current operator was asked to hand out safety flyers for those of non-English speaking people and refused. I think it needs to be... that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Just check on that we've got the wording correct, please, Chris. On the screen. Thank you. Anyone wish to speak to that motion? Then I'll put that motion. I'll ask again if you do a show of hands. Those in favour, that council strongly urge the state government to consider traffic management and safety issues when allocating the Bruny Island ferry tender. Yeah, contract. So those against, that is carried unanimously. Thank you. And I'm looking for the next. Thank you.
Yes, I'm Leslie Allen.
Leslie Allen, Miramar Park, Blackmans Bay. These major issues make mine look rather petty by comparison. Potholes, particularly bottom of Roslyn Avenue as we're trying to approach Beach Road. There it is. We're trying to avoid it and it's going to cause an accident. And that whole area at night needs to be much better lit, particularly in the wet, because it's very hairy, scary going right up on Roslyn Avenue at that particular point. Incredibly dangerous. Also, when I think about it, the roundabout as we approach Kingston itself is poorly lit, and particularly on a wet night, you can kind of go over the top of that roundabout without actually knowing it's there. It's rather dark. So that's it, but I'm sure other people have favourite potholes.
Thank you, Leslie. Mention. That pothole in question will be filled in and made good very shortly. And the other items you mentioned will be investigated. So thank you for bringing those forward. Robert.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll move that the council prepare a statement outlining the principles, guidelines and recommendations being or to be adopted by council with respect to the financial management of the project located on the land now known as Kingston Park, and that the statement be tabled at the next available council meeting.
Just need to get the wording here, Robert. Oh, okay, please. Do I have a seconder, ladies and gentlemen?
John Cox, Crass Road, Lower Longley.
Thank you, John. Wish to speak to your motion, Robert?
Thanks again, Mr. Chairman. This is a very significant project, and at the moment, as I understand it, councillors are very concerned about the amount of capital that is invested in it and the time frames on which that capital will be returned back to the community. It seems to me that it is of such a significant magnitude that a detailed report of the kind that I outlined there would be appropriate for the community's general information. And by the way, Crossweight with 1S, please.
Thank you, Robert. Anyone wish to speak for or against? No one wishes to speak to the motion. I'll then put the motion. Those in favour, and that is, I think you can all read it from there? Yep, okay, so the motion just put, those in favour, if you would signify by raising hands. And those against? That is carried unanimously. Thank you, Robert. Any further items? There are none. Going once, feel like an auctioneer. On that, ladies and gentlemen, I will very shortly close the meeting. Thank you for your attendance. I hope that the climate change adaptation the council has been working on gives you an indication of just where we're going with this item. It does affect us significantly. We have 336 kilometres of coastline, all susceptible to erosion, all susceptible to a number of issues in relating to climate change, and council's thoughts have always been that we should be on the front foot meeting it, because we believe that going forward if there are some opportunities, we should be looking at those opportunities rather than being the negative way. And certainly on a national scene, that Kingborough has been regarded as one of the leaders in Australia as far as local government and shires throughout Australia deal with climate change and are looking to work with any organisation. And one of the things that Mr Ferrier didn't indicate on that, we've had a number of inquiries, particularly from far north Queensland. We even had an inquiry from Canberra. And we've had inquiries from South Pacific nations, so there is some interest in what we've been doing. As I said, we have 336 kilometres of coastline, and along those coastlines are many roads, and there is erosion happening now, and it's going to be a real issue for us going forward, and that's why it's important. Not only for that, we are bushfire prone as we move into the summer season. We are one of the heaviest, well, Hobart is the highest prone capital city within Australia for bushfires, and of course we know what happened some 49 years ago, and we don't want that repeated. In relation to the community hub, I hope that both Garth and Rodney have given you an insight of where we're going on that. Community has been very supportive of this project and are looking forward to that to be completed without delay. Certainly we are making overtures to the federal government for a financial assistance, and we will continue to do so, and some exciting things are about to happen there. One, the community hub, as we indicated, and the Kingborough Health Centre, which will be located there as part of the agreement that we have with the state government. So that brings conclusion to this. Thank you for your attendance, councillors and staff. Thank you also for your attendance. On that basis, I will declare the meeting closed at 12:02 p.m.